Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast. It's the first race of the 2025 season taking place at the Australian Grand Prix. Very excited to discuss it and obviously plenty to talk about. Of course, you have, as always, hosts myself and Anton and Savannah as well for this season. Well, guys, like I said, plenty to talk about. Savannah, let's start with you. What are our initial thoughts of this weekend?
Well, I think it's definitely been a jam-packed weekend overall, from weather to rookies to new tyre compounds, the works. It has all been there. And I think overall we looked at a pretty good outcome in the end. And I think it's a very good showcase of what's to come for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. I definitely think it's going to be quite an exciting season if this Grand Prix had anything to say about it. Anton, what about yourself?
Well, I've been looking forward to this race weekend for a long time. And I think after it's over now, I can say that my rhythm is fairly messed up after, well, I don't want to complain, of course, for Australians. They have the same feeling for the rest of the season. For us, it's going to be tough on these first few races. But yeah, it was very exciting. It was good to get going. I think there's more than enough to talk about on this first weekend. So let's get into it a little bit. Savannah, what were your main takeaways from the first three sessions, which were, of course, the practice sessions?
Well, seeing that the big role player in this Grand Prix were the rookies, I was excited to see them actually go toe-to-toe for the first time on the first Grand Prix track on the calendar with the gents who have already been around for 1 or 2 years. And I think the next thing on the list that really kept me interested or focused on what was happening was the difference in temperatures and weather conditions around the track. I mean, last year we saw the sunny side of Melbourne, where Sainz took the trophy home for the Scuderia. But we were jumping between rain forecasts and wind forecasts like there was no tomorrow. So that kept me quite interested in what was happening in the different garages. And I think the other thing that was preempted before the race possibly was looking at how many of these 20 drivers were actually going to survive the race that has just happened. And we've now got our verdict, but I think for everyone on the track and everybody that was involved this weekend, I think they're happy to be finished and going home to rest.
Yeah, actually, it was interesting that already early in the week we got forecasts of rain for the Sunday, but the other sessions were going to be dry. So that makes it extremely difficult for the drivers to prepare. Like you're saying, a lot of rookies who are not used to these weather conditions. I think the last time we had a wet Australian Grand Prix was in 2010. The last time that it was wet and the season opener was in 2003. So all in all, not conditions that we see very often. Conditions that I was very excited about before the weekend would get going, I think.
Of course.
We've mentioned it over and over again, but you know, it just adds a different element to the race. I think over a full season, you're always going to have a few wet races, so it's good to already have one so early on and to spike things up a little bit, throw in a couple of different parameters. Samantha, qualifying was dry though.
Yeah, qualifying was dry. And I mean, what was interesting was that we saw for the first time, this is where we're really seeing the cars in their full capacity for 2025 to see really who we're going to see likely with the pace in the car, at least for qualifying. And I would say that McLaren, we expected to see them come out on top. However, I think that if we're going back to the practice sessions, we saw them a little bit, I think they were a little more reserved than what we actually anticipated when it came to qualifying. So seeing both McLarens at the top and locking out the front row was something to be seen. And surprisingly, seeing Max in third, Mercedes obviously I expected, given what we were seeing during preseason testing, that they were likely going to be in line with possibly the Ferraris in terms of pace behind McLaren and Red Bull. So seeing George Russell finish in fourth was something I would say was definitely expected. There are definitely a few surprises here. One of the things also that was really exciting was seeing the rookies come out. And unfortunately for Ollie Bearman, he had a crash during practice at one point and then didn't do so well turning around into qualifying as well for him. So that was a little bit of a difficult start.
Problems, right?
He had gearbox problems, and actually, of course, leading into the race, he had to start from the pit lane. But for him, he didn't actually end up really qualifying at all. But we saw some other rookies that some did better than others. I mean, Isaac obviously was one that was definitely surprising, finishing in 11th. We saw a few others here, Bortoleto finishing in 15th, Jack Doohan. So these rookies are coming out and we're starting to see some pace, which was really surprising. Kimi actually finishing in 16th.
Pushed out by Bortoleto.
That's right. Pushed out by Bortoleto. And I think that, you know, we all know there's a lot of hype surrounding Kimi and seeing exactly how he is going, like where that hype is going to translate onto the track. Seeing him qualify in 16th, he obviously had a pretty big shoes to fill going into the race. But of course, we'll talk about that later. And I would say that there are definitely some other surprises. What was everyone's thoughts on the Racing Bulls pace, and specifically Yuki qualifying in fifth?
I think this is going to sound controversial, but Horner messed up in his choice. It was said or mentioned by Yuki in the later season of Drive to Survive that results speak for themselves, and I can fully agree with him wholeheartedly there. And I think this goes to show exactly what that comment from him is saying. We always say don't count our chickens before they hatch, but Lawson hasn't shown the most competitive data in comparison to who his teammate is, Verstappen. He walks around with a mindset of wanting to imitate the aura of Verstappen, but he's got a long way to go. And I definitely think Yuki, with the experience that he's had already in F1, he stood a better chance in that seat.
Well, actually, I couldn't agree with you more. I said it at the end of last season, I would have given that seat to Yuki. But then again, with the trend of Red Bull, Perez being the exception, but Red Bull is usually quite harsh on their drivers, so you know, Lawson is under a lot of pressure, and I do think Yuki should be the next one to take that seat, although perhaps I'm getting ahead of ourselves. But then again, you know, it's just a logical way of looking at things, and I don't know. I mean, we're going to get to the race later. Racing Bulls messed up their strategy there on Yuki towards the later stage of the race, because he was doing outstandingly well. But it's just funny, the situation with Red Bull and the two teams, and getting, you know, even ahead of this weekend, there were comments from Helmut Marko. Now, of course, I understand he's just being asked questions in the media. He is going to answer, so it's also perhaps a little bit harsh to nail him down on that. But then again, it's funny to make these comments ahead of the weekend without having seen any results yet, making comments on other rookies being either B or C tier drivers, and then all of them outperforming Lawson on qualifying. It was, it does bring a smile to my face, because all of this stir up, I mean, I enjoy it. I like watching it, and it's interesting to see how all of the rookies perform. And like you said, actually, Hajar, the one that I perhaps even expected least of, if we go back to our season start intro podcast that we did a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about all of the rookies and we somewhat even skipped Hajar, but he did quite well, although the Sunday would be a bit more dramatic for him, if that's the right word to use. Talking about dramatic, I think Savannah, you watched the race live. What time did it start for you?
I was up at around 5:30 this morning. It's been quite an early weekend for me on a whole. staying up till 3:30 in the morning to watch FP3 sessions. It's not my go-to, but the dedication is there, so I did what I needed to do. But no, the race officially started at 6:00 with lights out. So I had my coffee in hand and my red blanket. And because ironically, South Africa was mimicking the exact same weather as what Melbourne was at the time of the race. So it was like, nice. I was there live.
Right. Samantha, you watched it the next day?
Yes. Well, the next day, Anton, being still the Sunday, of course, but technically the same day, yes. But I mean, if we were to go back, I learned my lesson from the very first season that we did this podcast. I was definitely excited about the race in Australia, and so I decided to stay up. And that race was one that went on for more than 3 hours. There were so many red flags, and so long story short, by the time Anton and I recorded, I'm pretty sure I was awake for 24 hours and slightly delusional during the recording of the episode. So I learned my lesson and definitely made sure I had a good night's sleep last night. Woke up very early this morning to watch the race. And I think it was the right choice. One thing I just wanted to mention,
I can confirm the delusional phase that you had last year. It was two years ago. Like, was it already? I'm a bit delusional today, actually. I decided that I would also throw my rhythm a little bit to, what I did was I actually went to bed 6:00 in the evening in order to wake up 11:00 for the pre-race show, watch the race at 12 midnight, which did take quite long, and then, of course, having to do the scores, and then, well, we'll get to all of that a little bit later. But actually, I do want to say that that's not a bad... I know that if I stay up late and watch these races, I used to, while living in Asia, had the same thing. And a lot of times it was late at night. And I know that if I don't sleep beforehand, I do tend to get drowsy during the race. But actually, if you do sleep a couple of hours, 3 to 4 hours beforehand, it actually works quite well. So it might be the right medicine for next weekend's race in China as well. Yeah. But okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about the race.
I can vouch for that entirely. Having to do 2-hour sessions of sleep before FP3 and then a 2-hour session before qualifying, it's a killer. But it was done.
So one thing I was just going to say before we get into the race that I found interesting as well, because we talked about surprises. We were just discussing Yuki and his performance, and obviously Isaac. So both racing bulls, but the actual car itself, like they have this year for 2025, the Racing Bull car has been completely restructured. I do think that that's obviously contributed to the surprise that we're seeing in the pace. Longevity wise, we'll see how it pans out, but that is something interesting to make mention of, because as we carry on to 2026 and all the new regulations that are going to be involved, a lot of teams are focusing their energy and primarily most of their energy into the creation of the cars for 2026. This year, however, they were one of the only ones that really have just transformed everything on it. So I thought that was an interesting point to mention. And one other thing that I think we should also say before we talk about the race, the one other surprise is Williams as well, the pace of the Williams. Albon and Carlos Sainz doing well, but both drivers qualifying in the top 10. And I mean, historically, over the last several years, that is something that you don't typically see. So I think that brings at least a little bit of optimism and excitement looking ahead for Williams as maybe a really strong contender for a midfield car this year.
And after the days in Bahrain and also the practice sessions, I think the general feeling for Sainz qualifying was even that, you know, he himself and others were even disappointed while he qualifies into Q3, which is not really what we're used to in the last couple of years from Williams. So that gives you a feeling of what the current vibe is at Williams.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a reinvigoration that's hit the Williams garage this year. And I think they're just grateful that they haven't had to rebuild a car yet. So I'm excited to see what happens with him as we progress throughout the season. The jubilation that happened with the garage this past weekend with Albon's results was absolutely breathtaking to see. The camaraderie and almost, I'm going to call it a family, because I think those guys see each other so often that it is a family for them. And they've welcomed Sainz with open arms, and he looks very comfortable in the team as well.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that actually, I think that James Vowles is also a very important part of that.
Yeah.
I think as a team principal, he is, I don't want to, you know, the previous ones that we had with Jos Capito and Claire Williams, I mean, those were all great people, but I do think that James Vowles has that little bit extra to bring that team together and to put the people in the right places. So I think it's a fair assessment of calling them a family, Savannah.
Well, I think that's a great segue to talk about the race. And as we all know, it was yet again a lengthy one coming out of Australia, but none too surprising. And we did start with what Anton was hoping for, rain on the track. All drivers were starting on inters with the exception of Stroll. I believe he started with wet tires for the for the start of the race. And we also saw two drivers starting from the pit lane. That was Ollie Bearman and Liam Lawson as well.
I think just for clarification, and I'm purely going to say this for those who possibly don't understand what happened, the start that we're going to talk about now is called the aborted start.
Well, why don't we talk about the beginning of the race? Savannah, why don't you tell us a little bit about what your first thoughts were in the first lap?
Well, I think we're all expecting a little bit of chaos, but I think we got a little bit more than what we asked for. And touching on that aborted start, so we obviously had formation lap starting, and then we had Hajar, who crashed into the barrier at the exit of turn two and had a broken wing on the car. So what, for those who don't understand what happened, the procedure of an aborted start is triggered by when the race director, for either various reasons, such as a car having a problem or a crash during the formation lap, is noted. The procedure is then noted as an aborted start, and the drivers are instructed to return to the grid for a new formation lap to be completed. For communication wise, the teams are informed of the aborted start via the official messaging systems that they have on the pit wall. And then obviously penalties can come into play here, where drivers who breach the aborted start procedure, such as pulling away from the grid prematurely or jumping out of the grid boxes, can face penalties, including anything from reprimands to actual fines. And I think a good example of this, what we saw, was last year in the Sao Paulo Grand Prix, where Lando and George Russell were fined and reprimanded for breaching the aborted start procedure after Stroll crashed on the formation lap. So that's just a little bit of a rundown on how this procedure actually works for those who don't understand really what happened, or if you're new to the F1 scene. But yeah, hopefully we don't need to see many of those again, because it does eat a little bit into the time. And generally what happens is the race director will then deduct a lap from the actual race itself. So this race was meant to be 58 official laps, but due to the aborted start, the race ended up being 57 laps.
I guess another thing we wouldn't want to see again was the tears in Isaac Hadjar's eyes.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
but I think it was a class act from Anthony Hamilton, Sir Lewis Hamilton's father, in consoling him. Hajar has obviously said on multiple occasions one of his biggest idols, if not his biggest hero in the sport, is Lewis. So to see that level of compassion towards him was absolutely astounding.
Yeah, he already won the best father of the season, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I would say another driver that and that's race ended very early and was also is also a rookie, but had a very disappointing situation happen. Just a series of unfortunate events would have been Jack Doohan. He's a driver that there's no surprise that he's under an immense amount of pressure, because that's been vocalized openly from the Alpine side. However, for Jack Doohan, first of all, in his qualifying, he was actually on quite a flyer of a lap, and unfortunately had to back off a bit as a result of Hamilton at the time. At that point, he managed to only finish in Q3. However, he very well could have had his chances increased had he been able to continue to complete that lap. Then we had the situation where shortly after Isaac's accident, Jack Doohan had, by the looks of it, hit the lines and just lost control of the car due to obviously the track being wet and not having a lot of grip. And that was it for him. So he didn't really get to start the race at all either. Again, unfortunate turn of events for him, and any driver that has to finish a race at the very beginning has to end their race. They essentially just have to wait in the hospitality section for the entire race and until the end to be able to really kind of assess the situation. And for two rookies that have yet to be able to really stretch their legs, and as for Jack Doohan specifically, under an immense amount of pressure, it's a mental game that definitely wears on you, I can only imagine. So unfortunate situation for them. And then shortly after that, it was Carlos Sainz who ended up in the wall. For that one, I'm not sure if that was actually an issue with the car itself, but I'm sure that they have already determined what the outcome is after the race. So
yeah, at that point, actually, I was thinking that at this rate, we're not even going to finish with one car. I mean, that was lap two, and we were already three drivers out with Hajar, yeah. Even before the start, and we had the aborted start. Then on the first lap after the start, we had Sainz and Doohan. Actually, the start, other than that, was, I think, relatively clean. I mean, it didn't happen at the start. It happened a little bit later on in the lap. The getaway from Norris was, I think his reaction time wasn't as quick, but actually he accelerated pretty good. It seemed that Piastri had a little bit more trouble getting away quickly. Verstappen was on his heels straight away. Couldn't overtake him in the first corner, overtook him a little bit later. And yeah, like you said, we then went to a safety car with Sainz and Doohan being on the track and having to also finish their race. And I think from there onward, we had, I don't want to say that the first 20 laps were, actually, I think up on the point where Verstappen went deep, and Piastri was able to reclaim that second position. I think up until that point, there weren't too many things happening. But from that moment onward, we started having a little bit more. I don't want to say chaos. Actually, what I never really understood was, we heard that there was a safety car infringement from four drivers. I think we first heard about Hamilton and Tsunoda, and then later also Alonso and Albon. They never got a penalty, but I also never really found out what was the reason for their infringements, of what their infringements allegedly were.
So what I saw on the official documentation, the first two that were noted for infringements were Alonso and Tsunoda, and they were under investigation due to possibly not leaving more than 10 car lengths to the car in front of them.
Right.
But that was obviously non-void in the end for all four of the drivers that were under that infringement.
Right. Yeah, okay. That's a fair... I think we have seen penalties before that in the past, but I think last season it also happened a couple of times, and it was just warnings, not really any penalties.
Yeah,
so that explains why they weren't penalized this time either. And I think a little bit further on in the race, towards lap, we were getting towards lap 30, and the McLarens were both cruising quite easily, although we had heard from several teams on the radio that they were expecting rain, and nobody really knew exactly when it was going to come and how hard it was going to hit, but we could see the clouds in the distance. And I was just you know, getting ready, sitting down to really see the battle unfold between the McLarens, because Piastri was initially a couple of seconds behind Norris, but he was able to get or almost get into DRS range. And as he was approaching Norris, we heard on the radio that he was told to hold his position. And he was actually being told that, hold your position until we get to dry circumstances, because at that point in time, they were still driving the intermediates. Everybody was asking themselves, when are we going to go to slicks? And actually, right after that radio message, although, of course, we don't really know exactly when that radio was radioed in. I mean, we get a slight delay usually on the messages, but right after Piastri was told to hold position, he actually slipped. I think he even slipped twice in turn 4 and turn 6, if I'm not mistaken. And then there was a bit of a gap between him and Norris, and then he was being told on the radio that now they can fight.
Right. I thought to myself that my first immediate thought was, please let's not repeat last year when it comes to radio communication from McLaren. And I thought it was interesting because after the race, Lando had made mention on the fact that they had made mistakes when it came to radio communication, and they think, and he believes they've gotten better. I think the true test will be situations like this, and several races to go to really determine how that communication is going to play out. But yeah, I was definitely scratching my head, unfortunately, with that decision, especially just the timing, more than 2 seconds behind, and then you tell him that it's free, that he's free to race. And ironically enough, shortly after that, the safety car came into play. So at that point, I was thinking,
because
okay,
another
maybe
rookie crashed.
Right.
Yeah, the eternal
That's
rookie.
Right.
Exactly.
And I was thinking to myself, okay, so maybe we can really see what's going to happen. But of course, that wasn't the case, was it? The rain came down, and then it became more of a strategy decision on who was going to make the right call, who was going to pit to switch to inters. And we saw for some teams it was effective calls. Like in the case of McLaren, specifically for Lando, it was a good call because he was able to get in there. And for Max, it was a call that, I mean, we see his strength regardless, because he went around the track on mediums while everyone else was pitting and still somehow managed to maintain pace, switch to inters, and then finish in second, which was impressive. And we also saw another team, unfortunately, in the case of Ferrari, who had a decent position, but then waited too long, and at that point they had dropped back to a situation that left them at the back of the top 10.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you mentioned what we were talking about, Alonso getting into the wall, of course everybody went for slicks. I think the only ones that didn't was the both of the Haases. They were anyway a little bit behind on the rest this weekend. Apparently they had a couple of issues, but yeah, everybody went for slicks, and the two McLarens both went to hards and Verstappen on mediums. And that was, I thought, okay, now I'm going to sit down and watch, you know, how the McLaren and the Red Bulls compare on slick tires, even though they were different compounds. But I think on the wets, it looked as if McLaren was definitely a quicker team, a quicker car than the Red Bulls. But yeah, it didn't take that long. I think it was lap 45 where both McLarens slipped and went off when it started to rain. We had been anticipating that rain for a while, and Norris was able, even though he slipped, he went into the gravel, but he was able to make it back onto the road. Piastri, on the other hand, didn't, or he slipped from the gravel into the grass and seemed to be stuck. He actually avoided getting a safety car into play by basically reversing back on the road. I was thinking that Stroll could probably learn a couple of lessons from that masterclass of getting yourself out of the grass. Although no jokes on Stroll, actually, he finished in a very good position this weekend. But I guess we'll get to that in a little bit. So yeah, but it was interesting to see actually Piastri at that point in time. I think we all thought he's out of the race, and he actually still managed to finish in the points, even finished ninth, which was spectacular. But you could just feel the crowd the disappointment when Piastri slipped off, and like you were already touching on a little bit, at that point it became very chaotic with teams having to decide to go into the pits or not. It was Red Bull initially telling Verstappen to box, but then to stay out, and then a lap later it was exactly the opposite. He was first saying he would stay out, but then did box. Which, yeah, like you were saying, Ferrari then decided to leave Hamilton out, which meant he was, yeah, driving in first position for a bit. But that was a mistake by Ferrari, because that basically cost them a lot of points. I think if they would have pitted at that lap, they would have finished up much higher than they did. There was a couple of interesting radio messages anyway. I think both Leclerc and Hamilton. There were, I mean, with Leclerc with the water issue, and Hamilton with the button issue, or you know, back and forth of pushing it, yes or no. It was. I think we can all be, although I guess I'm talking to two Ferrari fans, so I suppose you weren't all that happy with it. But I think we should be happy that we're still listening to board radio messages, right? Because I think it's regardless of which team it is. I mean, this is the kind of conversation, or the kind of stress and the kind of communication that you do want to pick up on watching Formula One. I think it was also the first bleep that was bleeped out, which was Hamilton, yep, on the radio. Although I'm sure that Isaac Hadjar had previously also used some foul language. It was just not broadcasted because everyone knew what was going to happen. But what did you make, Savannah, of those messages on the Ferrari radios?
Well, I mean, I think the Ferrari radios have become quite an infamous comedy section of F1. But I want to say cut them a little bit of slack. It's obviously a new dynamic with Hamilton in the team. And like he said in the press conference or with media after the race today, he's still learning the car. And he's had such a long relationship with Bono at Mercedes for the however many years he's been there that getting used to a new racing engineer in your ear, it takes time. So I can understand his frustrations. I think we've all come to know that Hamilton prefers not to have information constantly kind of given to him throughout the race unless he really asks for it. But I also don't think it's fair that in the situation of when Leclerc's race engineer told him, listen, there's going to be rain in two laps, I'm just letting you know, and it was quite heavy rain that was coming in, Hamilton had to wait and then ask the question to his engineer himself and ask, is there rain coming? So I'd like to see a little bit of improvement on that fact, where if something like a weather condition is going to affect not just one of your drivers' races, but both of them, as it would, then announce that radio to them at the same time so that decisions can be made. And if it needs to be a stacked pit stop, then those sort of things can be coordinated a lot more easily. Obviously, that will come with a little bit more practice with a Grand Prix to come for the season. I did have a good chuckle at the message of Leclerc and his water tank that had apparently decided to not play along. And I think the quote of the day would be, we'll add that to the words of wisdom. I cannot wait to be using that in my vocabulary in the next coming weeks.
I think that you will hear that coming back.
It'll definitely be, there's probably a million memes already that's been created from that.
Of course. I think overall, looking at the messages that were across the board used today, or broadcast at least on the F1 TV and Sky Sports broadcasts, it was kept fairly clean. And I think the information that was being pushed back and forth between race engineer and driver, regardless of who it was, was actually done on a very professional level. And what information was being relayed, I'm not discounting as non-pertinent information, as we've seen in Hamilton's case, where they could have just dialed back on the information that he was being given at the time. But engineers were on the ball. They were keeping their specific driver that they were basically driving with in the loop of what was happening. I mean, we didn't see anything such as not slowing down under a yellow flag and not being aware of stupid little things that people were getting caught up on in the last season. However, we did see one or two instances of unsafe releases in the pit lane, and I know Bortoleto was given a 5-second time penalty for being unsafely released from his pit stop into the way of Lawson. But then we also ended up with the incident of Kimi Antonelli being accused of the same thing by cutting off Hülkenberg. However, we saw in official documentation that was later released, Mercedes actually did a appeal against that penalty, and they were successful. The penalty, from what we saw, was not actually recorded in any way, shape, or form, and that was their argument. I wouldn't say it's a solid ground or standpoint to host an argument on, but if there's no evidence at all, such as Hülkenberg giving a radio message to his team, or obviously putting out pure damage if contact had happened, it would have been a different story. But with the evidence that was not there for the public eye to see, it became a very difficult situation. But we did in the end see Kimi be promoted to P4 in the final race classifications, where him and Albon had actually just switched positions.
I would say one really positive thing to come out of the Kimi with Kimi is that he started in 16th, and to manage to be effective in the rain in Australia, weather conditions, everything that we've discussed, and then finish in 4th, very impressive debut for a rookie driver, and he is also the youngest driver on the grid with pretty much minimal experience at this point. So if this is the beginning, I think that I can see exactly why, I can start to see why maybe there was a lot of faith in promoting him into the second driver position for Mercedes. So very outstanding result for him. I think even finishing in P5 would have been a fantastic outcome, but P4 mm-hmm. is even better. And then of course for Albon, his result as well overall for Williams was a great start to the season for them.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and just to round it off a little bit there with a couple of the other drivers, because yeah, you're right, Savannah, you mentioned that Bortoleto was blocking Lawson. Both of them actually later crashed around lap, what was it, 40 something, 46, 47, because of the track being wet. So we lost another two rookies. The only two rookies that finished the race were Antonelli, who you just mentioned, and also Behrmann in the not so competitive Haas this weekend. And I was also a little bit, I was feeling bad for Gasly, because he was actually driving a fairly solid race and seemed to be able to poach a point or 2 points. But in those last laps, he unfortunately couldn't keep up with the Ferraris, and also not with with Piastri. And not only did I feel bad for him, also for myself, because I actually had him on P10 in my prediction. But it does seem that Alpine, under these conditions, is able to score points. I would say the same about the Racing Bulls. But as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think Tsunoda was pretty harshly done by his own team with the strategy, and because he was driving a solid race too. He was definitely he should have been scoring points there. In the end, he didn't. He even finished behind Gasly in 12th. So I think all in all, you mentioned there that I was actually myself pretty surprised with that turnaround of events of the penalty of Antonelli. I suppose originally there were camera images, because otherwise he wouldn't have been punished. But when Toto said in a media response that nobody saw it, I'm not going to do Toto's accent, but he was basically saying that it wasn't even shown on television and nobody cares and this and that, I thought that was not really a fairly good argument. I thought that the right to review would be overturned, as a result I just sort of went out on a leap and, you know, had been, it was by then I think close to 3 o'clock at night for me, so I thought I'll just post the results expecting them not to change, but unfortunately there was a little tail to that story, but we'll tell that tale when we get to the forecast scores.
Yeah, and I think just touching on the P5 result for Albon, the team actually released a statement or a report that obviously takes you to their webpage on their WhatsApp channel. And Sainz didn't sit back in the garage. Sainz jumped onto the engineering side for Albon and actually helped make decisions on when to put for inters, when to go back onto slicks. And they actually seemed pretty well organized that Sainz could just step into a role like that after what happened to him in lap one, and he also seemed very keen to do it. So again, the gelling of that team is on a very solid foundation, and I only think they're going to get stronger.
Yeah, definitely a lot of good things to look forward to for the season. Okay, so it's that time of the episode where we get into scores, and Anton, I'm pretty sure we hit a record for the start of the season, did we not?
I think that's a good starting point to talk about. We did indeed hit a record. Our previous record was 1,211 people playing during the Singapore Grand Prix last year. We had 1,826 people that played this weekend, so definitely a very good achievement for all of us at Forecast.
Yeah, that was amazing to see.
Amazing achievement. And I can't wait to see where we'll be at the end of the season.
I already said to Anton a little bit earlier off our WhatsApp chats, I'm waiting for the day we hit 2,000. Like, that's a celebration day in my book. And I'm pretty sure it's coming fast and furious.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because we saw actually last year that at the first race of the season we had over 1,000 players. That was the first time that we hit the 1,000 mark, and then after the first race of the season it goes down back a little bit. The reason for it being that, you know, leading up to the first race there's a lot of time for a lot of people to join, and now between this race and China, you know, there's going to be people who don't make their prediction again, but there's not that much time for new people to join. So I do expect it takes a bit of time, but I am confident we are going to hit that 2,000 mark, and I'll be celebrating with you, perhaps over distance, but I think we can all buy we should reward ourselves with a bottle of champagne or something. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about some more of the stats of this weekend. And then I usually ask how many people predicted the correct podium, but I think that little stat was already somewhat sneak previewed in one of the chats. So I think at least I saw, Savannah, you saw that message, didn't you?
I did. I think if I remember correctly.
We can ask Sam.
Yeah, before I say anything, let's ask Sam.
How many people got it correct?
Yes, because I did not see the message, so I guess I could.
Oh, did you? Did you?
No, I did not. No, I did not. So okay. It would be a good question to ask me.
So, Norris, Verstappen, Russell.
How many people, I think?
How many people out of 1,826?
I am going to say 3 people.
Wow, you're close.
Because it was?
It was 4.
Exactly. You know, I was, as I guess. Was saying 3, I was going to say 4 in honor of Lando's driver number, but close enough.
No, 3 in remembrance of your final finishing position of last year. So
very true.
But it was 4 people, and actually Well, let's. What do you guys think about the average score? Perhaps that one's a little bit tougher to estimate. But since you cannot guess, since Savannah couldn't guess the amount of people that had the podium, right? Because you knew, how many points do you think was the average score this weekend?
Well, I think our top scorer was in the very high 60s, and obviously it was a bit of a chaotic weekend that we were all predicting on. But I'm going to say the average score was probably around 42 or 43.
Sam, what do you think?
I'm going to go, I was thinking 40s as well. But you know what? I'm going to go high 30s and say 38.
All right. It was actually a lot lower. It was 25.3.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, then yeah. I'm below average.
Yeah, well, actually, the interesting thing is that there was a group of people bringing down the scores. There was actually four people that scored 0.0 points, unfortunately. Actually, initially, of course, we're talking about now all the stats after Kimi got P4. So, yeah. Of course, we did a run of all the results before that. And the ones we're talking about now is with Kimi on P4 and with Albon on P5. Initially, there were two people with 0 points. There's now four people with 0 points. The interesting thing is, if you look at their predictions, I would say at least two of them made predictions fairly serious. With you know, for example, there's one guy from Indonesia who went with a podium of Piastri, Leclerc, Hamilton, which doesn't sound all that strange, but. Yeah, neither of those things happened. He made a prediction of Piastri, Leclerc, Hamilton, Sainz, Norris, Verstappen, Russell, Tsunoda, Antonelli, Alonso. I mean, those are all drivers that you would expect to be in the top 10. It's amazing you can make a prediction with that like that and not even score any points. There was somebody else with 0 points who had a win for Piastri. Then the other two that ended up without any points had P1 Sainz. But P2, Piastri and P3, Hamilton, and the other one went with a podium that was a little less likely, I would say, with a win for Gasly, a P2 for Ocon, and a P3 for Doohan.
I always do love seeing people predict with, like, the most outrageous, like, sort of prediction ever. I mean, we've seen Gasly on podium before. We do know... if you've been around in the sport for a while, that obviously the team he's in is not the strongest team, but we do know that he has the momentum to fight when he needs to fight on track. So I always enjoy seeing people use forecasts as a way of really just showing their personality, and a prediction like that really does. So I applaud you in that. Whoever you
and there's different strategies in the end, right? I mean, I guess the three of us with our finishing positions of last year, yeah, girls, you both beat me, but I think both of our aims is to, you know, do well over whole season. Now, there's definitely people, not just judging from their predictions, but because they actually tell me that what they're going for is weekend wins. So they go with slightly, let's say, unrational predictions, just for that one Gasly win or for that one. And I mean, look at, for example, Brazil last year where we had two Alpines on the podium. I mean, who would have expected that? And so there's definitely different strategies, because you know that, you know, if you make predictions like the three of us did for this weekend with 1,826 people playing, there's bound to be a lot of other people that make the same prediction. We are not that likely to get wins, although, you know, I'll speak for myself. We'll see where where you girls finish during the season, because there can always be that odd win. Let's talk about the three podium finishers of this weekend. And you were right there, Savannah. The top scores were in the 60s. Let's start with P3, which was Gisela Maizares from Argentina, who's actually a rookie to forecast. Of course, with this many new players, there's a lot of rookies that scored high.
Nice way to start.
Yeah, definitely. Very good way to start. So Gisela from Argentina scored 60 points, exactly 60.0. And on P2, we have William Kaguna from Kenya, who's not a rookie. He played last year as well, and he scored 20, sorry, 62 points, not 26, 62. 26 is a little bit closer to the amount of points that, well, we'll get to our scores later. But yeah, congratulations, William, for making it to the podium. And the winner this weekend, another rookie from Ireland, Ross Sorensen, scored 67 points. So congratulations.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Yeah, very well done.
I can note that with the original scores, with Kimi being on P5 and Alex being on P4, the podium would have been exactly the same. The points would have been slightly different. Ross would have had 69 points, but it would have been, a podium of Ross, William and Gisela. So in that sense, nobody really missed out with those. But, well, I mean, some people did miss out, but on the podium, things would have been the same.
So were those the ones that had the correct podium?
That's a very good question. Actually, like I said, there was four people that had a correct podium. So these three people indeed had a podium with Norris, Verstappen, Russell. And our P4 this weekend, Filippo Morelli from Italy, also had a correct podium. Just missed out on the forecast podium, but he did predict that very podium. So other than that, in the top 20, if we look at it, I think this is the first time that we have somebody from Norway in the top 10. On P9, we had Erling Jonasson. And I think it's also the first time that we have somebody in the top 20 of that's from Fiji, Irosha Prakash, on P17. So
wow.
That's some first timers. And actually, talking about countries, I think might be interesting. Of course, last year we finished, we were also looking at the amount of points accumulated per country from all the people that play. And last year we had Argentina who won, and the Netherlands on P2 and Spain on P3. Now, maybe the two of you, one by one, can guess the countries that after the first race have accumulated enough points to be in the top 10 this year.
Well, this is a tough one. I mean, last year we saw Kenya and Argentina do really well.
So, all right, let's bite them off with those. You say Kenya and Argentina. Kenya is actually on P1. Thus far, and Argentina a little bit lower than what they were last year. So we have Argentina on 8. Savannah, which other countries?
So I think my first country of choice will probably be, I'm going to say, just for the heck of it, India.
India is on P7.
I don't know, I'm getting a gut feeling of Mexico.
Mexico is on P3.
Ah, that's good. Those were the two that I was going to pick too.
All right, pick two other ones.
Those are my next two. Okay. Good choices.
There's a couple of countries that always do well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe you've already mentioned the Netherlands. Well, you said last year, but if you haven't mentioned them for this year, I would have included them.
They're on P9.
Okay. And then, let's see. I have one more. Who am I going to... What country? I'm going to go with Greece.
No, Greece is actually quite low. I think Greece is even...
Really?
Yeah, Greece is competing with South Africa. Greece is on 21, South Africa on 22.
Okay, so do I get a free guess again? No, I'm kidding.
You get another guess. Yeah, I think at some point I'm just going to tell you before we pass all the countries in the world, but let's see if you can guess a few more.
We'll be here all night. I would love to say Canada, however... I don't think Canada is in the top 10.
Canada's not in the top 10. Yeah, Canada's actually on P16.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't have high hopes there, but it would have been nice.
I'll tell you what the other countries are. So we have Spain on P2.
Mm-hmm.
We have Lebanon on P4.
Oh, I missed we Lebanon. Have, and that would have been an important one. That would have been very
important. Britain on Britain on P5. We have... Okay. The United States on 6, and we're still missing Italy on 10. And with that, we have mentioned all the countries in the top 10. So, it'll be interesting to follow throughout the season which countries are going to compete well. Of course, depends also on the amount of players from that country. And some countries do better than others. For example, initially... which is very interesting, with the result being Albon on P4. Spain and Mexico were actually draw at P2. But Spain had 95 people who played and Mexico had 102 people that played. So it doesn't always mean that more players means more points. Of course, if those fewer players make good predictions, they can score a lot of points. In the end, Spain is on P2 now after the results changed, because it changed the points a little bit. So I think next up is talking a little bit about our collaborations for this year. And of course, you will know if you have been playing last year that we have a collaboration with the DRS Lane in Beirut, Lebanon. And they give out a $10 voucher each race weekend to the Lebanese player, or basically the player in their competition, because of course now you can make groups in the app, and everybody that's part of the DRS Lane group is competing for the $10 voucher. And actually this weekend it was Angelo Zohbi who won that prize. He finished only P75, but with that he was the highest finishing player from the DRS Lane group, and he scored 44.9 points.
Yeah, very nice.
And we have for this season another collaboration that we're doing with Pregame Merchandise Motor Shop, which is a F1 shop, a merchandise shop in Manila, Philippines. And they give out prizes. Well, they give out a whole bunch of prizes, actually. They give vouchers to the three people that finish on their podium for the weekend. And they also give prizes, very nice ones, actually, like team jackets and caps.
I did see that.
And shirts for the winners of the full season. And they even give out a couple of prizes also for those that are first at the season break. So that's very exciting. And the way to join their competition is basically become a member of their pregame membership club, which you become if you have had any history in their shop. So basically, if you make a purchase of their shop, you can become a part of their club. And with that, you join their competition. And you know, these guys also have a bar in Manila where they host watch parties. I saw a couple of videos of what they did last year, and actually seems super exciting.
So, it does.
If you're close, if you're close, I would definitely recommend to pay them a visit, and also the shop. I mean, they have a lot of nice items.
I mean, the bar definitely looks a lot of fun to have a watch party at. And I believe I said this before to you, Anton, but yeah, if I could catch a flight over there, I would. What an experience! I'm sure it would be.
Yeah, no, I'm thoroughly jealous that I'm not closer to that sort of thing. But hopefully, in the foreseeable future, my fellow South Africans and I will be able to join a little bit more in depth on Grand Prix paraphernalia and events, actually.
Yeah, no, it's a very exciting exciting collaboration. Let's look at who finished on their podium, actually. So on third place, we had Terence Magaling, who finished on P118 overall worldwide, scored 43 points. And second, Arnel Iglesias, actually also finished P75, just as Angelo Zohbi from the DRS lane. So both of those P75s get prizes. It's interesting because it shows that you don't necessarily need to win the weekend to win some prizes in Forecast F1. So he scored also 44.9 points. And first in their competition this weekend, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right. It's going to be troublesome throughout this season, I suppose. But it's Edward Edward. Finishing P24 in the worldwide competition, but finishing first in the pregame Motorshop merchandise membership club with 48.3 points. So congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well done. That's awesome.
That actually means that I think we're slowly progressing to the part where we are looking at our scores a little bit. And I'm sure you've already peaked and have an idea of where you finished. I just don't know if you know about the others on the podcast where we finish. So let me just pass by each single one of you. And let me start with Savannah. And actually looking for you, Savannah. I was searching for surname, but I found your sister.
Yeah,
first.
And she beat me. So I was very proud of her. She did consult me a little bit because it's the first time she's played on the Forecast app. She was trying to understand how the app actually works, how the groups work. So I said to her, I will help her for the first two races, but then she's on her own.
Yeah, I was going to say, she doesn't seem to need a lot of help.
No, exactly. I was thrown in the deep end when I started last year, so it's not going to be a lot of help for long from my side to get her going. I mean, I think she only got 8 or so points more than I did, but nonetheless, she's almost sitting 500 people ahead of me.
Yeah, that's what happens if you have that many people that are playing the game. Actually, she did score. I'm just checking. She scored 8 more points than you did because she went 29.5 and you scored 21.5. Do you remember what your podium was?
I think my podium was Leclerc-Norris Verstappen, if I remember correctly. But that she only got where she got because she actually went against her gut feeling of putting Ferrari in P1. And went with Norris. I think I think after she saw or heard me speaking about the free practice sessions, obviously at our dinners and things, she went behind my back because she originally said that Leclerc was going to P1. She blindsided me. Ridiculous.
Well, actually, she went with the same podium as I did, but we'll get to that. You finished P1100, Savannah. That's the disadvantage of playing a game with a lot more people. It also sounds like you're doing a lot worse when you're actually just doing, I don't want to say just about the same as last year. You did very well last year, so let me not say that. Samantha, you finished third last year, and you got a very good start of this season again because you finished 39th this weekend.
Well done. Not too shabby. But, you know, we still have, what, 24 races to go? So the pressure is
23.
23, yeah, technically. Yeah. No, I know, 23 after Australia, yes.
But these 46.8 points are, those all count. So very good result. You, what was the reason that you got that many points? Have you figured that out?
I'm going to say probably the midfield choices and possibly the points that I would have picked up between between Norris and Verstappen, although I did have them reversed. I had Verstappen to win and Norris in second.
No, you didn't. Ho, ho, ho. That's maybe what your memory tells
me. Oh, maybe that.
You had Norris, Verstappen, Leclerc.
Don't even listen to me. You know what? I don't know. At the end of the day, it's funny because I make my picks. And I'll just briefly say this. So normally I go based on instinct when I make my picks. I make a very quick decision. And the funny thing is I always like to do it at the very last minute to also just to give Anton's blood pressure to rise a little bit, you know, like maybe within the last 30 minutes of the deadline. So like I said, when I make these decisions, they're very on the cuff, instinctual. And so because of that, coupled with not a strong memory, it doesn't translate well once we get into the podcast, because there's been many times often where I seem to forget exactly what my podium was.
Yeah, you're the girl in class that walks out after the test and says, I think I screwed it up, and then actually ends up getting a lot of very good
exactly
mark.
Well, we'll see.
That's the most annoying girl in the class. I've had.
You're just saying that because you're just saying that, Anton, because I think you're still a little bitter from the loss of last year. But that's okay. We've got a long season ahead of us. A lot of banter back and forth between the two of us on a competitive level. So,
well, you scored 46.8 points, and it's actually interesting. So, Savannah, you being P1100. Sam, P39. I finished right about in the middle between that. I'm P571. I scored 30.6 points. I went, as we said, with the same podium that your sister went with, Savannah. I went with Norris, Leclerc, Piastri. So, yeah, I guess we all have slightly different starts of our season. But as Samantha was saying, there's still 23 races to go and 6 sprint weekends with that, so a lot of points still on the board. I think actually, well, of course, since this is the first race of the season, the ranking is exactly the same as the score of this race. But what would be interesting is to look back at the podium finishers of last year. Now, of course, Sam, you're one of them, but the other two, let's see how they did. So that's Joseph Morgan from the United Kingdom. He won last year's Forecast F1 on the last race. Very impressive finish, this year he didn't get off to a very good start. He finished P1600 with a podium of Leclerc, Piastri, Norris, and Rosario Vinci went with the same podium as me, and Natalia did. So he finished P 477, and yeah, I guess somewhat okay start of the season. So it's going to be interesting also to see how they do. And of course, in the next couple of podcasts, we're also going to have a look at the rankings, at the current standings. But of course, like I said, that's the same as how everyone finished this this race. And maybe one more thing to mention, which I find quite cool. There's a new competition that has been started on another Instagram channel, which is not being run by either one of us, but it's definitely something you should check out. It's the F1 News Forecast channel. So that's actually a channel run by two guys from the United Kingdom, and they are doing a World Cup group. So that's actually somewhat of a World Cup competition where we have players from just one country. So you know, there's only one person representing Canada, one person representing the Netherlands. So only it's basically at a first come first get in basis. So if your country hasn't been taken yet, then I would say definitely send these guys a message, f1.news.forecast. and yeah, so they have a group in the app, and we're gonna have a look there too at which country wins per race weekend. It's actually very interesting that I already mentioned Irosha from Fiji, and she actually is the highest placed player in the World Cup thus far. So Fiji is at the top. So that's very interesting. And looking at the high scores, of course, the high scores after one race are yeah, somewhat easy to to get by, because of course Ross Sorensen is in the P1 position worldwide and for Europe. We have for Africa William Kaguna, who finished P2. In South America, we had Gisela Maizares, who finished P3. But let's also look at the four other continents in the game. So in Asia, we have Akshay Medane from India, who finished P8 this weekend, is the highest finishing player from India. The highest finishing player from your continent, Sam, from North America, is Jason Berghout from the USA on P5. In the Middle East, we have Adam Abbas, who finished P23. He's from Lebanon. And in Oceania, there we have Irosha again, Irosha Prakash from Fiji, who finished P17. So those are the high scores. Of course, going to be interesting to look at those after the race weekend in China, where we have a few more points on the board. Of course, this year we don't have the fastest lap point. It's not being given out by F1, so it's also not a part of the game. So in a regular race weekend, rather than 102 points, we can now only earn 101 points. And for a sprint weekend, we can get a maximum of 137 points. And of course, with the sprint weekends, the prediction deadline is a little bit earlier. It's before the start of FP1, so that means we're all making blind predictions, both for the sprint and for the race. A little bit more difficult, but of course, that counts for everybody, and there are more points on the board, so it is going to be very interesting. And I think with that being said, what we're going to head towards is play a little quiz, first one of the season.
Woohoo, let's get started.
So I guess that leads us only to playing the quiz, first quiz of this year. Actually, before we do that, I do want to apologize for all people in Serbia, because on the Instagram post, I wrongly put their flag. There's a little bit of a mix-up. The flags, it's on a alphabetical base, and instead of the flag of Serbia, it's being shown the flag of Senegal. So I am aware that the Senegalese flag is not the flag of Serbia. That's a small error in the Instagram post. In the app, it's all set to the right flag. But a little apology there. Anyway, there was quite a little bit of mix up. I had to post I think the Instagram post 5 times. One time, of course, because of the stewards messing up with that Kimi penalty. But after that, I messed up myself a couple of times. I ended up going to bed at around 6:30. Wasn't planning to. But anyway, I think without further ado, let us start with the quiz. So, of course, we are going to play guessing the amount of people that get the drivers in the correct spot.
Another coffee is in order for you.
That leaves it. Yeah, well, that leaves us with the amount of people. If you subtract that from the total amount of players, you'll get the amount of people that got them right. But anyway, I think, Sam, I'll let you begin or choose who can start, because you guessed three people for the podium, which I thought was a very, very good guess. And usually the one that gets closer there gets to start. So, of course, the idea is that we're going to go from P1 up until P10. No more fastest lap this year. And we're going to start with Norris. And Sam, you can guess how many people you think had Norris in the correct spot out of 1,826 people. Go ahead.
Ooh, okay. Well, the numbers are going to go up in terms of my guesses this year, that's for sure.
You need to take that into account for sure.
Definitely, most definitely. I'm going to go with, I'm going to say 887.
I think I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm going to go 628.
All right. Well, it's right in between those two numbers. Actually, Sam, you're 132 over, and Savannah, you're 127 under. So that does mean that, Savannah, you are closer to the 755 people that went with the Norse win. But those were very good guesses. You were almost as far away from the right answer. But Savannah just edged it there.
All right. Close call.
Very close call. Well, we go to Verstappen, Savannah.
I'm going to stick to a little bit of a lower number. The lower numbers are calling out to me today. So I'm going to say 385 people.
Okay. I'm going to say 450.
All right. It was 235. So it was slightly lower than both of that. But again, Savannah's closer, so that's the second point for Savannah. And Sam, that means you get to pick Russell.
Well, I am going to stick to twos, and I'm going to go with two. Actually, I'm like rethinking my entire strategy here. But let's stick to twos. Let's go 225.
I'm going to go low again, and I'm going to say 97.
That's 3 points for Savannah. It was only 56 people. I don't think many people were expecting the Mercedes to be on the podium at the first race of the year. So that's a few people. I think we're going to go to a very interesting one now. Kimi Antonelli on P4.
I think he was interesting. He was a little bit of a wild card that ended up being in the mix. So I'm going to play it safe and say not many people chose him, but I know that he is also quite a favorite, especially in the rookies.
Many.
I'm going to go with 35.
Okay, I'm going to say 8.
Well, you're both right. It's not
both right.
A lot of people.
Oh.
Well, yeah, and that's
what's going on with this game?
It's not a lot of people. It's somewhat similar to what you guys had with Norris, that the correct answer is right in the middle. Savannah, you are 13 points. You are 13 people over, and Sam, you are 14 people under. It's 22 people.
Close again.
So again, a point for Savannah. See,
it looks like we're going neck to neck on the track, Sam.
Yeah, this is almost going to be a clean sweep by the looks of it.
Well, it's close every time, but all the points are going to South Africa. So. Sam, it's for you to take the one of Albon on P5.
Albon P5. Well, I think this is going to be a low number again. I'm going to go with 12.
I'm
going to
go with 8.
Oh, Sam, I really hope you are going to score a couple of points. But this one, again, you know, there was only one person that went with an Albon P5.
Wow. Wow.
Well, actually, done, whoever you are.
Yeah, well, I will tell you who it is. It's it's a rookie,
please.
Actually. It's a first-time player. It was Amin Benour from Tunisia, who was the only person who dared to put Albon on that P5. So, impressive. I would have never come up
Very
with that,
impressive.
But he does score all the 10 points.
Yeah, well done to you.
You know, interestingly enough, if you looked at that prediction before the race took place, many of us, I at least can speak for myself, I would have looked and went, oh, that's a pretty bold prediction. But sometimes bold works, right? And that now it makes a lot more sense. So nice choice.
Well, talking about bold, Savannah, how many people were bold enough to put Stroll on P6?
Oh, my word.
Stroll in the rain. Performs well.
I'm going to say...
Anton, you're funny.
Just Just to play it safe, three people.
Okay, Sam, this one is this the one for you. I mean,
you know, it's horrible because my answer, I feel terrible as I give this answer, but I'm going to say nobody.
Well, again, point is going to go to Savannah. There was eight really? People that had strolled.
I'm sorry, did you say yeah. eight people?
Eight people. Yes.
Wow.
I didn't now write down their names, move. But yeah, that's I was kind of surprised as well.
I'm bold in my predictions, but I'm not that bold.
Yeah, talking about surprises, I realize now getting to P7 that we have hardly mentioned Hülkenberg actually scoring a higher point
true.
Tally in the first race that Sauber scored throughout the whole of last season. So I think that does deserve a minute of our time. I think I think amazing performance. Of course, with all the DNFs, he was more likely to get points. But if you look at other cars that didn't, you know, we talked about Gasly, we talked about Tsunoda, who finished outside the points. Hell, I mean, in the end, you know, he's finishing ahead of two Ferraris. He's finishing ahead of one of the McLarens. I think Hülkenberg does deserve a bit of applause. I think it was an outstanding performance by him.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think that throughout the just to briefly say, to further add to that, Anton, I think that ultimately, like, consistency wise, he had a very consistent race. I think that was the important thing. He managed to weather the storm, so to speak, but also it was the fact that he was consistent throughout the race. I think that is why he ended up with the result that he did. But yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up.
But we still need to guess how many people went with that in their predictions. It's you first.
It's me. Okay. Let's go with four.
I'm going to go with one.
Well, you haven't scored any points yet thus far, Sam, but you do deserve some
at
credit
least one,
because
huh?
you got this one right. Yeah, you
That's
got this
so
one right.
Great.
It's nice. Four people.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Okay.
I did write down. Yeah, it's four.
Well, at least
people.
If I'm going to get
so
it right,
I did write
I'll
down
get it.
Who those. Yeah, no. If you get the point, you get it with. You can have some fame to claim on this one. It was two people from Kenya who got this one right: Mwendia Ungu and Samuel Onyoso, and Dorota Samoro from New Zealand. And another rookie, Gabriel Mikalev from Malta. That's actually our second player from Malta. And we had Francisco Tosi, who actually scored two podiums, or at least one, if I'm not mistaken, in the previous years. But four people who went with Hülkenberg, and that's Sauber on the P7. Another thing that I would have never come up with myself in my predictions, but it's worth the 6 points. So we can hardly say anything bad about it. And it means we go to P8, Leclerc, and that one's first.
Let me just start
Savannah.
Off by saying my heart was absolutely shattered when we ended the race and Ferrari was so low down in points, but nonetheless we made points. But I'm going to go with 25 for Leclerc and P8.
Okay, I'm going to go lower and I'm going to say 15.
Well, Sam, it just took you a while to get going, but you're getting good at this now. Yeah, you're one off. It was 14. So
really?
That's another
nice.
Point. I mean, you can't win it anymore. It's 2-6, but this is somewhat
Thanks
impressive,
reminder,
I got to say.
Anton.
So tell me how many people then had Piastri on P9?
I'm going to stay low again, and I'm going to say 10.
Take it even lower and say 4.
Sam, why do you start getting good at this game so late
on?
Oh,
come
on. I don't get it. You're one off. Again, it was 11
really?
People.
I don't know. Maybe I just
nice.
Needed to warm up. But,
I was going
to
say,
you know, like,
I'm
do that
doing
quicker
cooldown
next
laps.
Time.
You're doing warm-up
yeah.
laps.
You know, next time, just start a little earlier. But this is impressive. Okay. All right. We get to the last one. Hamilton on P10. Savannah,
I'm
going to
keep it low
first.
Once again, because I think a lot of people had high hopes for Hamilton, as did I. But I'm going to go with 11.
I'm going to say 13.
All right. That last point is for Savannah. It was 7 people. So you were both right. It wasn't that many. And with that, we conclude it was a good quiz, even though Savannah won it 7-3. But I did feel it was quite competitive. Good start of the season.
You felt like it was competitive at 7-3. Nice.
No, but I mean, in a certain way, I mean, all of your guesses weren't that far off. I mean, you were always somewhat within range. So it was meant as a compliment, Sam.
I'll just take it.
Don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for this year we're going to actually have to keep a tally of
exactly
who wins, and at the end of the season we see who's the actual reigning championship of this race.
Anton will have that tally. I have no doubts.
Yes, I'm writing down
exactly. He's writing it down as we speak.
And yeah, I think people.
He's got it printed out.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Well, let's see where we end up at the end of the season, you know. But it is interesting actually to look at it over time a little bit. Also adds a competitive element, I suppose, to the quiz. They're not absolutely standalone quizzes. You're now actually in a league. So yeah, I think that concludes us talking about the Australian Grand Prix. I think all in all, we can conclude that it was very interesting by itself, but also very nice to get the season started and to, you know, finally really talk about some actual data and some actual things that we saw rather than just rumors and things in the media. We also, I mean, all in all, I think we have about five races in the first 6 weeks, right? So I think they follow quite shortly after one another. We're now going to China next week with a sprint weekend as well. So I don't know. I wasn't such a big fan of the sprints when they first started. This was before we were playing forecast, but actually because of forecast and because of being able to predict something additionally, and actually myself personally quite liking the blind prediction aspect of everything, I do actually look forward to the sprint weekends this season. What about
I actually really enjoyed the sprint predictions last year. I mean, not only do you get more points when you predict, but if your predictions are right, but I think it just adds a little bit of a different level, because I feel sometimes the sprints are overlooked because obviously the main race is the focus, but showing where teams have a little bit more strength, possibly in a shorter stint, really makes the entire season interesting. But one thing I wanted to ask Anton, do you mind just explaining how the blind predictions work for the newcomers?
Yeah, of course. It's actually a good point. We always see that the first sprint race of the year, there is a few people who are missing out. Of course, there's a time clock in the app where you can see a countdown clock up until the deadline. So with that, it shouldn't be too hard to figure it out, but you might still miss it. The idea is that you need to make your predictions before the start of FP1. So of course, we only get one practice session in the sprint format, and that FP session, you won't even, well, you will hopefully watch, but you will have to make your predictions before that. So predict before the start of FP1, you make a prediction both of the sprint race and the race in one go, you submit it, and you sit back, relax, watch the whole weekend, watch all the different sessions. I mean, there's a lot of things to watch with the sprint weekends. It's very nice, yeah. Actually, I think that we have changed to the qualifying being separate for the sprint and for the race, and no longer having the sprint race be the qualifying for the race. I think that was a good switch. It means we have a lot of interesting sessions. It means the teams complain because they have very little time to get the setup right, but of course that results also in results not always being as straightforward as we sometimes see in the rest of the weekends. I mean, I think we can conclude that the McLaren looks very strong, but of course, with little time to get the setup right, it might be just that little bit harder for them to get everything going. Of course, Parc Fermé rules after last year, or in between 23 and 24, have changed slightly. So teams are now able to make changes to the setup between the sprint race and the qualifying for the main race, which is both on the Saturday. Of course, the race is in China, so everyone has to figure out their time slots and the time schedules again and their rhythm. I'm sure I'll be doing something similar to what I did this weekend, is basically sleep before the start of the sessions, at least for the Sunday, and watch them live. I mean, in the end, yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion, Sam and I. We have often is that it's just nice to watch a race live when it actually happens. It's just tough to get it done and you know, stay awake and everything, but I do like the lead up to it more. If I'm watching it 6 hours later, it's difficult for me to really get into the pre-race show and everything, and I just start with the race. But actually, I do enjoy the whole build up towards the live event. I make a coffee, I make another one, I find a beer here or there. And, you just work towards the climax of the start of the actual race. Yeah. And I always seem to find them. I don't know what it is, but I do enjoy watching them live.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, live is the best way to watch a race. Normally, even for me this morning, I put my phone on airplane mode last night and I continued until I was done the race, because at the moment that I turn it off, it's lighting up like there's no tomorrow and I don't want to know what happens. So yeah, live is always best, but we'll see about next week when it comes to exactly what time. I believe the race is 3 a.m. our time, Anton.
Yeah, exactly. For us, I think both the sprint race and the main race are at 3. And to be honest, I don't have the time. I think the qualifying for the sprint is is also 3:30. Then the sprint is at 11 in the evening on the Saturday. And yeah, it's going to be, again, those are our time slots. It's different for everybody. So, just be aware that there's a lot of sessions and they might not be in the best time zones, of course, depending on where you're from. I guess in Europe this time around, it's a little bit easier. I think both in Europe and in Africa, it was a little bit early this weekend. It's going to be slightly better
coming weekend with the Chinese Grand Prix. We will be, I think it's both the sprint and the race itself kicks off or starts with lights out at 9 o'clock in the morning for us.
Yeah, no, this is the same mistake I was making, but that's not true. The sprint is the earlier session on Saturday, and it's the qualifying for the race that's at the same time race. Yeah. Yeah, I made the same mistake just earlier, but so it's a good one. You know, even if I suppose, it's a good idea to really watch. Actually, if you go to the Formula One website, you get to pick the timing sheets either at track time, which is of course local Chinese time, or in your own time. That is, of course, if your time of your computer or laptop is set at the right time. But actually for us, for Sam and I, it's exactly a 12-hour difference between China and us. So that makes it
I'm kind of in the middle.
Right. You're exactly in the middle. Yeah. Well, I guess hopefully we'll have a lot of material to get excited for the podcast for next week. Absolutely. I suppose we all know what we're going to end this podcast with.
Oh, yes. That's right. First anthem of the season. And it will not be the Canadian anthem.
No, it won't be. Not for Stroll, not for you, Sam.
Well, I think without further ado, I would like to introduce and represent the South African national anthem.